Today's program was brought to you by New York Wines, reminding you to eat and drink local this Thanksgiving. For more information, visit newyorkwines.org.
This is Chef Emily Peterson, host of Sharp and Hot. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Listening to Eat Your Words on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Kathy Arroway. And this week, it is the Sunday before Thanksgiving, so it is one of my favorite weeks of the year. That's because it's that time of year when a lot of people obsess over food, folks who would maybe normally otherwise as not. And everyone is planning a big meal, looking forward to eating it. And I love how Thanksgiving is that one holiday where you really don't have to do anything. There's not like any requirements like, you know, make a costume or buy gifts or, I don't know, dance around a maple or something. You don't have to do anything besides just eat. So it's a wonderful day. And I'm going to talk to my guest all about it and her new book, too. So my guest, I'm really excited. It's Molly Yeh. How are you?
Hey, I'm good. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. So your new book is Molly on the Range, Recipes and Stories from an Unlikely Life on a Farm. And are you on the farm right now?
I'm not. I'm actually at my mom's house outside of Chicago.
Okay.
And I just had a little event here, and I'm staying here until Thanksgiving.
Okay, so you're going back to the range for the big holiday?
Yeah.
Excellent. So this is really exciting. You've been blogging since 2009, and this is your first book, and it's everyone keeps asking me about this book. It is actually a really... prize object. I think somebody else ran off with this copy at our station, and I had to get another one. So, congratulations. It's great. Okay. I have to say on a personal note that, Molly, we met like 5 years ago or so.
We cooked dinner together.
We did.
And I was so starstruck. It was like... it was 5 years. It was right before I left Brooklyn.
Yes.
And... Yeah, and that was so much fun. I think we made like bok choy, I remember, and steak.
Did we? Oh yeah, we were grilling. That's right. That was fun.
Yeah.
That was so cool because it was really great to meet you, and you were just sort of, you know, getting into your groove of blogging. You'd only just started maybe a couple years ago, I think, and you hadn't moved to North Dakota to live on a farm yet. So it was still just sort of like the Brooklyn sort of life, and then. All of a sudden, or not all of a sudden, I guess, but, you know, 5 years, so much has happened. You got married, you moved to a farm, and now you have this best-selling cookbook, and you have, denizens of followers who are stealing your book from our station. So
we are going to find that person.
No, really, though, what happened? How did...
So we cooked dinner right around the time mm-hmm. when I had recently graduated college and was kind of figuring out what it was I wanted to do with my life. I had a degree in classical percussion, mm-hmm. which went really far when I was applying for food writing jobs.
And, from Juilliard? I don't know.
What, like, xylophone doesn't translate to writing about burgers?
Maybe there's some kitchen uses for banging things around a lot.
What?
Maybe there's some kitchen uses, back of the house uses. I don't know.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, that is how I got my started with playing percussion, is using my mom's wooden spoons and whisks
to
bang on her pots and pans. So that was kind of foreshadowing into the future.
Mm-hmm.
So right around the time when we met, I was just figuring out what was going on. Like, I was doing freelance music. I was doing some freelance food writing. And I had this blog, which for a while was just a hobby, kind of an extension of my life diary.
Yeah, a blog. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And my husband, well, my then boyfriend, mm-hmm. we were just sort of getting our way in the world, like as post-college students or post-college people in New York. And it occurred to us that we really were homebodies, and mm-hmm. we found ourselves more and more staying in on weekends and cooking. Ordering pizza and mm-hmm. watching Netflix, but then also working on our own projects. Like, I got so much joy staying at home, working on the blog on the weekends, mm-hmm. and we realized that we wanted to be closer to our families, that maybe we shouldn't be paying New York rent if we were going to lead kind of a homey lifestyle and you know, want to focus on our own things rather than going out all the time, which for the first 5 years in New York, we loved.
Mm-hmm.
And we were out every night. But Nick, my husband, he mentioned that, you know, my family has this farm mm-hmm. in northern Minnesota, right on the North Dakota border. They're, like, that's one option. And so we went out to visit, and I loved it. And I said, I'm moving here, whether you're with me or not.
Wow.
And, yeah, so it all went down within a matter of just a few months. We went to visit, and I was like, yes, we're doing this. We went back to New York, packed up all of our things, and then drove.
Wow. Amazing. And, so you were really bitten by the country bug then.
Totally.
In a big way.
Yeah. Just the idea of driving in no traffic to the grocery store and then being able to take a grocery cart through the aisles and not have to worry about carrying everything home was very appealing.
Yeah, and now you have chickens and everything. Did you have any inkling, did you have any, like, suspicion that this might strike a chord with your many readers, that this story of moving to a farm in somewhere much slower paced would just kind of... really be attractive to many people who may be fantasizing about running away from it all.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it didn't really occur to me mm-hmm. until people started emailing me and showing interest in my story. I mean, I was definitely one of those people in Brooklyn who was fascinated by the farm life,
uh-huh,
who
uh-huh.
wanted to grow my own food on, you know, my little fire escape, and who loved pickling and mm-hmm. loved mm-hmm. all those things. And my vision of the farm life was this sort of romantic image of waking up before the sun and walking barefoot through the fields mm-hmm. and trying an olive off of the olive tree. And yeah, I don't know, just very, very romantic, like yeah. wearing a sundress through that. And so I learned that
sweet,
our farm
it's not-
is It's different than
it's
that.
It's not like that,
but
in North Dakota, it's not like that at all.
Yeah, you don't want to be barefoot on a farm there. But yeah, like it was kind of cool to see people kind of latch on to that story. And meanwhile, though, when I moved out there and I had no friends and I had not a whole lot of other things to do, and I was able to focus on the blog and turning it into something that more people than my mom would read.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of went hand in hand in helping to build a readership.
Yeah, it's really amazing how you get to focus, you know, on one thing. And you were doing your music, you were trying to do gigs, you were trying to do food writing, you know, interning at magazines and so forth. You were trying to do so many things in New York. So it's a really powerful story to show that, you know, once you focus on one thing, you can see where it goes from there. It's really exciting. So congrats.
Thank you.
All right. So this book is a delicious compilation of would you say it's a lot of hits from your blog's history, or is it mostly new? There's so many exciting twists and sort of fusions of cultures throughout it.
Yeah. A couple of the recipes, or a few of the recipes are new.
Mm-hmm.
Or, sorry, are old, are from the blog, but a large majority
wow.
of the recipes are new.
It's a lot of cooking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they were just inspired by growing up in the suburbs of Chicago and then living in New York, and a lot of them are recipes that I started making because I missed
yes.
some
mm-hmm.
of the foods in New York.
That makes sense.
Yeah, so that's where, like, the whole pizza chapter comes from. And then, like, the fried green tomatoes from the sadly now closed Salle de Mer inspired my fried green tomato recipe. So it's things that, like, if I didn't make them myself, I would have to.
Right.
I wouldn't have them.
Yeah, I'm seeing a lot of New York in these recipes. There's scallion pancake challah, for instance. You've got, you know, hummus and shakshuka and things that you know, I imagine you wouldn't be able to find up there, or I don't know, maybe, but
no, not at all.
Not at all. Okay.
There's no shakshuka up there.
Okay. So was that a shock? Was it sort of a culture shock with food? What they ate compared to what we're used to here and all the lovely falafels that I see on these pages?
I would say the most shocking thing was how many foods that I tried for the first time up there. Because living in New York and having access to every different kind of restaurant and every ingredient and all hours of
every
the day.
Every cuisine. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you think that you know all the foods.
we don't.
But we don't. Yeah, no.
Wait, tell me.
There are so many new words that I heard for the first time in my first month of moving there, like hot dish, which is
what is that?
A subset of the casserole. It follows a specific equation of a meat, a starch, which is commonly wild rice or tater tots, and then a vegetable and a cream soup.
Whoa.
I grew up in a household where you don't have creamed soup. It's just unhealthy. It's bad. But when I moved there and you spend one winter in Grand Forks, North Dakota, where it can get down to negative 30 degrees, you realize that it's everything you could ever want.
It's cream soup. Wow.
Yeah. So the hot dish is, that's like one of my new favorite foods. And there are endless possibilities and endless ways to make it your own and to, like, I do it from scratch using a bechamel sauce instead of the
Okay. Mm-hmm.
That's, yeah, but I will buy store-bought tater tots.
Yeah, I don't know how you would make those tiny little pieces of potato stick together. That's pretty amazing. So, okay, so hot dish, that's a new one. They don't get a lot of fresh vegetables out there, right? So that's...
No. So, that was one big challenge when I moved out there was, how am I going to get my vegetables during the winter? When
canned, maybe?
When you don't, yeah. So I do use some frozen spinach, and I make a lot of cream spinach, and that's where there's a recipe for spinach arugula in there, and that's the filling.
That looks good. Mm-hmm.
For that, yeah. And then, my freezer is stocked with vegetables, so that's where, you know, they get dumped into a hot dish, or they get dumped into a soup.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a lot of warm, hearty things like that you're, you know, trying to just sneak in one more handful of greens into there so that you can survive the winter.
So what kind of greens or what kind of veggies are we going to see at Thanksgiving this time of year? What do you
think? Well, our garden exploded with butternut squash.
Oh, that's good.
So there are a few squash recipes that I have just fallen head over heels with during this past month of trying to
use them all,
all of our squash. And there's this amazing Anna Jones's cookbook, Modern Way to Cook, Modern Way to Cook. She has this butternut squash and cannellini gratin that is covered with, you just like tear bread, sourdough or whole wheat bread over it and then cover the whole thing in Gruyere. Bake it and it gets crispy on top, and the bottom, even though it's a gratin, it's not very creamy at all. It's delicious and light.
That's a great way to make a savory sort of squash dish. Okay, so...
Yeah, all right. The savory squash. And all about, like, savory sweet potatoes, too. I tried to get my mom to let us do a savory sweet potato casserole instead of the marshmallowy one, but she vetoed that.
Oh, so that's a must-have, the marshmallow sweet candy dance?
Apparently, yeah. And I tried to play around with making maybe like a sage-infused marshmallow or a rosemary-infused marshmallow and doing the homemade marshmallow right on top of
the sweet potatoes. I was going to say, I bet you did.
But, well, I just, you know, sweet potato casserole does not appeal to me at all. So when it came time to start testing that recipe, I couldn't do it.
Yeah, it's, you didn't want to eat it.
I was not excited about it at all. So I realized I would just rather have sweet potato fries and ketchup.
I'm right there with you. All right, well, we're going to cut to a quick little commercial break, but let's talk about more of your recipes and this great book right after this break.
Thank you. Music for this commercial break is brought to you by TaxStar, and this track is called Vicodin Dreams.
Thanksgiving is a great time to support New York farmers, including local wineries. Find great white wines, red wines, and rosés from Long Island, the Hudson River region, the Finger Lakes, and beyond at New York City wine shops and restaurants. This Thanksgiving, New York Wines is proud to partner with Fleischer's Craft Butchery, which supports local farmers raising heritage breed turkeys in New York State. With a healthy dose of ingenuity and a collaborative winemaking culture, the number of wineries in New York has grown exponentially over the last 10 years, as has the quality of the wines they produce. New York is a world-class wine region offering quality, variety, and value. The perfect trifecta for a bountiful Thanksgiving feast. For information on more than 400 New York wineries, please visit newyorkwines.org.
All right, we're back chatting more with Molly Yeh, whose new book is called Molly on the Range. So thanks again for joining us. You still there, Molly?
Yes, thanks for having me here.
Awesome. So I love reading little tales of your life throughout this book, and one of the ones that I thought was really interesting, sort of picking up from what we were talking about in the beginning about how you just moved to North Dakota and was adjusting. I love your little tale about starting a brunch club with the ladies of Grand Forks.
Oh, yeah.
And because it was really interesting to me to read about how, you know, it's hard to make friends because everyone there had known each other since childhood. So,
and yeah, everybody knows everybody. And about 99% of the town is of Scandinavian descent. So to kind of come in there and, you know, as like a half Asian person from New York who is like asking all these personal questions to these strangers as one sometimes does in New York.
Yeah.
I was sort of like, I guess this isn't how you make friends here. So I kind of had to take a step back.
Okay. So because they all knew each other's lives, like through and through or something that they didn't ask.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's like everybody knew each other. Everybody like had this groove. And then I sort of came in and like was like a bull in a china shop. I had no idea what I was doing.
Yeah, but I can imagine, I'm just like savoring the imagination of everyone's faces when you serve things like, I don't know, the cauliflower shawarma tacos or the, what else looks amazing here? You know, the, what is this, scallion, slow cooker goulash scallion noodle-in?
Yeah.
And just everything here is so inventive, creative, and multicultural, just like you. And we're,
yeah, thank you. Yeah. Well, some of the things I would, you know, like maybe call them something else and then forcibly serve them to my new family and friends. So instead of calling it challah, maybe calling it pull apart bread. And then as they're eating it and as they're falling in love with it, I'll be like, okay, like this is a traditional Jewish bread and here's how you make it. And I'm used to having this every week and seeing it at every store, but it's not here, so you guys fall in love with it, and then I'll make it more. So it was a lot of just like
strategy.
A lot of strategy.
That's hilarious.
But yeah, it was going both ways too, because there were all these Norwegian foods that they would be like, oh yeah, lefse is just a potato pancake, kind of like your latke. But it was like trading potato pancakes.
Well, one thing I really enjoy is seeing all your fusions. You know, as we mentioned, you're half Chinese as well as me. So we're kind of sisters in that sense, and half Jewish. And when did you start playing around and like mashing up the flavors? Like, so for instance, your Asian Scotch eggs or, you know, you have scallion pancakes too. And you have, what's it called? The steam buns with schnitzel. Chicken schnitzel.
Oh, yeah.
So have you always been doing this? And did you grow up in was your household, you know, just happenstance fusioning as well?
I mean, I grew up in a household where, like my mom didn't want to buy Oreos because we could make those from scratch. Or, like, there were all these processed foods like macaroni and cheese. We would always make macaroni and cheese from scratch, and my mom was always encouraging me to kind of put my little own spin on it and add whatever ingredients I want. And so the Chinese and the Jewish flavors were things that I just grew up with. And
it just made sense.
And I'm just, they just made sense to me. And I've never really seen that strict line that you have to keep between, you know, keeping those separate. Like, my mom, she never bought me coloring books. It was always blank pages, and I was like encouraged to draw my own pictures. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. Like, the idea of blending these flavors and making these mashups was never something that was really new to me. And I have some friends. We have a mutual friend, Donnie Tsang, who will text me like all the time with these crazy mashup ideas and ask me if they sound good or awful. And so I have a lot of fun because he's still in New York, and we have a lot of fun just going back and forth, thinking up wild combinations and figuring out which would be good or which would be bad. Like,
yeah,
there were some really bad ones.
I'm sure. Oh, that's so much fun because I, you know, like being a hapa, like I didn't know, you know, it's always fun to see that other people are exactly like thinking the same thing too. So, mixing it up and, you know, do you ever hear any pushback, in this, I guess, current atmosphere where, people, there have been a lot of, and I've written about this a bit and we've had, you know, shows about this, but people have been, discussing a bit the politics of racialized food and cultural appropriation, and the idea of mixing up is not, you know, being authentic, quote unquote. Have you heard any pushback from or comments like that about your food?
I get, because I work with a lot of Jewish cuisine from mm-hmm. all over the world, including the Middle East, I do get a lot of pushback if I call a dish Israeli that that might or that does have Arab roots, Palestinian roots. Mm-hmm. So I have learned, and that was something that I went into just with ignorance, and so I got those comments, and then that forced me to dive deeper and to learn about that, learn about that history. So, like as scary as it is to ever get a negative comment, like those really forced me to go and examine the true roots of these foods and learn to adjust the language mm-hmm. and be very sensitive to that.
Right.
And I think that's really important. So for me, it's a challenge that's ongoing, like figuring out, diving into these roots and figuring out who really did invent this salad or this bread or that dumpling or whatnot. And so in that sense, it's like really good that like other people are sort of checking me and forcing me to not call shakshuka Israeli. That was like one of the first recipes that I put on my blog, and I called it Israeli, and somebody came on and explained to me that it has different roots.
I think that's a great attitude, you know, it's like, it's all, and then we all learn from it, you know, a little bit, mm-hmm. You know, just kind of being cognizant and nodding to, looking into and examining and trying to allude to the culture whenever you write about food is a great, that sounds like a great solve, rather than getting into a battle.
I feel like there's nothing to win by like calling something a different name or, mm-hmm. You know, and, like, wanting to be stuck in your way. Like, you could always learn from somebody else, like, what their story is and what their experience is with the food. And so it's just important to keep an open mind with all of that.
Yeah. Okay, so did you have any weird dishes? I have to ask about your Thanksgivings growing up. Did you have any crazy Chinese and Jewish inflections to your Thanksgiving dinners growing up?
Well, do you remember Thanksgivica?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Wasn't that, who did that?
That was a few years ago. For the first time in a really long time, and for the only time that's, like, not going to happen again for a really long time, Hanukkah and Thanksgiving lined up.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, the internet exploded with souffganiot filled with cranberry sauce, or like latke pumpkin pie, or all these crazy Thanksgiving Hanukkah mashups that were so much fun because, of course, fried food is perfect for Thanksgiving. And I don't know, I had a lot of fun making like Brussels sprout latkes based on the Brussels sprouts that my family would make for Thanksgiving growing up. And then, like, pumpkin souffganiot ended up being, like, really good. Or people were making, there was this one bakery in on the Lower East Side, Zucker, they were making, I think, a turkey souffganiot, which was so good because I love a savory donut. I think that, that was one of my favorite holidays of all time.
Amazing. Yeah, that sounds like a... That's a good one to remember. I guess that's not happening again this year, but you can always...
No, but I've since made Brussels sprout latkes because that was sort of one of these ideas that was born out of Thanksgiving, but it kind of translates well to...
I think that sounds great. I might have to steal that. And do you shred up the Brussels sprouts and then kind of...
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Matzo meal or no?
It's very similar to making a latke. So
okay.
You just shred the Brussels sprouts and then mix it with eggs, and you can add flour, or I've made it also with chickpea flour, and then fry it up and serve it with, we always do our Brussels sprouts with a balsamic, mustardy yogurt sauce, that goes right on top of the latkes, and it kind of takes the place of a sour cream.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, I'm going to have to steal that. All right. So much to look forward to with Thanksgiving. I'm excited to have this book on hand, too, throughout the holidays, actually. So I guess that's about all the time for us today. Yeah, but thank you so much for joining us, Molly.
Thank you.
And
this was wonderful.
Yeah, it was great to reconnect, and congrats on this book. And I'm sure everyone will... check it out. Just out from Rodale, it's Molly on the Range, recipes and stories from an unlikely life on the farm once again. All right. Well, thanks so much.
Thank you so much. Happy Thanksgiving.
Thanks. You too. Thanks, everyone at Heritage. We'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening. Never had no loving like this before.